Hello everyone, Tim Emerson of Kuan Yin Healing. And even though this is one of our integration weeks, I wanted to take a little bit of time and offer a little something extra that might help both integrate some of this and kind of look ahead to how to best implement this. It's really interesting that every culture around the world, every major religion, and minor religions have some sort of holiday, festival, teaching, similar to the winter solstice, that just at the times of greatest darkness comes the light. And and this rebirth of the light grows stronger. It's the, you know, whether that's the miracle of Christmas for folks or simply a natural phenomenon of cycles, it's a very consistent thing. And it points out a couple of things. We tend to think, how are things going? And we tend to answer that good or bad. And the truth of the matter is that the answer is always good and bad. In different proportions, that the world works in cycles. You know, we understand very well that, okay, winter solstice comes and comes the spring equinox and then the summer solstice and then the fall equinox and so forth, and a continual cycle. We understand that night and day is a continuous cycle. If we looked at the universe, we could understand much longer cycles, you know, how long it takes the sun to go around, to orbit around the Milky Way, for example. But everything is cycles. Now, we ourselves are energy, okay? Nothing mystical here again, pure science. We are frequency, we are vibration, we are energy. And this is not some abstract mystical ether construct, but energy, frequencies, that's why we call them frequencies, they move in waves. They move in cycles. They have high and low points. When we talk, this is even our language, yes, exactly. We have higher frequencies, like, say, gamma rays, X-rays. We have lower frequencies, like infrared, lower sounds. We understand this in terms of the spectrum, but we ourselves, our cycles, we're not some, you know, mystical energy just sitting there. We are vibrations in large, for large part, standing waves, you know, as the frequencies interact, but we are cycles. This is simply the nature of nature, and it is our own nature, you know. And it's interesting that even though on the one hand it's very simple, it's just circles, you know. That's all a cycle is, a circle traveling in time. Okay, you know, if we trace a circle, you know, we start at one point, we go in this big round shape, we turn to it. But if we're moving in time, that circle, as we draw it, is going to look like a wave. And this is our reality, okay, as we are in motion. So a couple of points of this. It's all very simple. But, you know, when all sorts of frequencies interact and we get complex standing waves, there's nothing really complex about it. You know, it's wheels within wheels within wheels within wheels within wheels within wheels. Like night and day within a year, with, you know, the Earth's orbit around the sun, within the sun's orbit around the Milky Way, with the Milky Way's orbit around the, you know, the universe. Cycles within cycles within cycles. Some of these are so fast we can't possibly see them, comprehend them. Okay? Like gamma rays, which move so quickly they simply move through us, right? Much higher vibrations. It's interesting that in the healing sessions that we've all worked with, we're talking about frequencies at that level. We can literally measure them when a practitioner is doing this healing. The gamma ray activity increases for both practitioner and client. But it goes way too fast on something we can possibly understand. It's too fast. At the same time, there are cycles that are way too slow. Like, you know, the Hindu idea that the Earth is on this 311 trillion year cycle, okay? That is so slow we can't possibly even start to comprehend it. but it is nonetheless a cycle. And so from the smallest to the largest and all this complexity, all of it is really quite simple. At the same time, it is far beyond our ability to see and comprehend. And we continually try to I think, wrap our heads around these sorts of ideas when at some point we simply have to acknowledge the supreme importance of humility, and that it is simply beyond us. There is literally no chance. You know, like Lauren Isley in The Cosmic Prison talking about a white blood cell traveling through the veins of a cat. It can't possibly understand where it is. Every one of your cells is a complete living organism, quite capable of taking in nutrients, getting rid of waste. If we take any of your cells out of you, put them in a petri dish with nutrients and don't let waste accumulate, in the laboratory, this can go on literally for decades. In fact, Bell Labs did an experiment with cells decades ago. They found they terminated the experiment because they said there's no point. We just believe we can keep these cells alive indefinitely, literally forever. You know, it's a complete living organism. But when it's part of you, it interacts as part of a cycle. Bruce Lipton points out that if you take a disease cell out of a healthy person, put it in a petri dish, the cell becomes healthy again. It's no longer part of the sick system. You know, it is. So much of what we assume about reality is simply not. We have a hard time wrapping our heads around the idea that we aren't individuals, but we are part of something much greater, a much greater entity. And yet we have this ourselves in ourselves, right? We don't think of ourselves as normally as individual living things. We see ourselves as one larger whole, although ourselves are individual living things. Again, wheels within wheels within wheels. It's all so simple, but it's all so far beyond us. So just simply acknowledging the humility that we are part of something way greater than our egos can possibly understand. Understanding that there is no good and bad. There just is. Things are the same. There's always good and there's always bad. It's just part of the nature of frequencies and energy and vibration. From the time of greatest darkness comes the light. This is also a lesson of abundance. You know, the barrel is never empty. There is always more. Every year, just as it's coming down, more comes back. And in the spring, all of nature blooms, right? And there's fruit and birth and abundance. More than we can possibly use all the time. It really points out for me an important idea in Taoism that, you know, we have the Tao that just is, that, you know, and the Tao divides as the Tao becomes, takes a step towards being manifest, it becomes yin and yang. Loosely the light and the dark, but yin and yang, and the greatest darkness becomes light, and the greatest light becomes darkness. We see this over and over again. This is not mystical at all, right? If you try to jump up and escape the earth from the ground level, you can't do that. But if you could manage to jump so high at a certain point, you would be in orbit. And either you would come crashing back down to the world hard, but if you could jump a little bit higher, you wouldn't come crashing down at all. Okay? You'd be in orbit. And if you could jump even higher than that, you and had escape velocity, you could in fact escape the earth altogether and not come crashing down. So, you know, what goes up does not come down necessarily. So where am I going with all this? A couple of different places. Tao points out from yin and yang comes the 10,000 things. It's all very simple. Light to dark, dark to light. It's a cycle. It's vibration. Like all energy, it's just a cycle of vibration. That's all that is. But from this complex interaction of cycles, each of them very simple, comes what the Tao Te Ching calls the 10,000 things. You know, the complications, the perception of all this. But it's really just cycles, yin and yang, emanating from the one. Why do things have to be good and bad? Because there are cycles. It's not a battle. When I look at this, I realized how much, well, we all do, but I'll be personal with this. I realized how much I live inside my head. And for me, tasting awakenness, okay, being able to touch the awakened plane, you know, it was not the ecstatic, happy experience that you might, for at least for me, that you might suppose, because the major thing I remember about it, other than, you know, yes, it was an amazing experience, but it's at the same time, I realized that everything had to change, that much of what I thought was simply flat out wrong, and even the parts of it which I was right, was not anywhere near as important as I fantasized it was. And I had to let go of a lot of things. I had to change a lot of things. But in particular, I realized that the world inside my head was just that. It's not even that I have to get past my thoughts so I can experience higher vibrations. The world inside my head was simply a world I had made up. And it still is, you know, the cares and concerns and all the things I need to do or need to take care of, or it's all in my head. Somebody else in the same space is seeing something entirely different because it's all in their head. It literally does not exist. That's why escaping this is called awakening. You know, we're caught in our own dreams. Don Miguel Ruiz talks about the dream of the planet, you know, and that's what it is. We are asleep, pretending it's reality in a very, very literal sense. And we can actually see this if we start really paying attention, that the world in our head is not what's real. It's real only to us. We made it up. The winter solstice, Christmas time, is, you know, people tend to, I find, these days, celebrate Christmas and then they're done. But, you know, we still sing about the 12 days of Christmas. And it's the 12th day of Christmas that is particularly interesting to me. And this is the Feast of the Epiphany. An epiphany is a sudden realization, a sudden divine realization. You know, the Epiphany, with a capital E, is when the wise men, the magi, come to the stable and they look at the child Jesus and they recognize the child as Christ. And I mean here not in the Christian religion sense, although that's, there's nothing wrong with that, but I mean in sense of a Christ nature, a Buddha nature, an awakened soul. It's something extremely important, and it's a sudden realization. It comes all at once. That's how awakening is, because, you know, it's, you can't be, you know, partly deluded. Once, you know, once you see it clearly, it's abrupt. That's an epiphany. And this idea of the epiphany, next to the idea of a world inside our heads, excuse me, I'm trying to breathe water just now. sorry, no gills, except in my imagination. This goes really nicely, the idea of the world inside our head and the idea of waking up in a sense of an epiphany. One of my favorite writers is James Joyce, a very difficult writer. His first novel, which actually looks like a collection of short stories, 15 short stories, it's called Dubliners. And every one of the stories in Dubliners ends with an epiphany. And all the epiphanies come with pain and tears. They're all abrupt realizations. And Dubliners covers, it's very harsh criticism of Dublin in 1904, Joyce's Dublin. And he covers every conceivable, just about angle, of Dublin people and society, and he's harshly critical, not in a blaming, finger-pointing way, but really analytically, and really noting that the living are living dead-end lives, and that the dead are the only ones who are truly alive. He starts off, you know, very young. In particular, the third story in Araby is the story of a young boy who, at the end of the story, sees themselves as a creature ridden, you know, driven, and his eyes fill with anguish, okay? And he has this vision that there is so much more than the life that he's been exposed to. And he doesn't really understand it. He's a boy in the story, but he doesn't like it. And many people refer to the story as Joyce as a Young Boy. Of course, Joyce's next novel was Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man. And as we go through the stories, it's really interesting because the harsh criticism starts to turn as we go through these. It's still harsh, but there's a much more sympathetic treatment of the characters. Yeah, we judge them, but we look at them, we understand. And then the last story in Dubliners, The Dead, takes place on the Feast of Epiphany. And the main character in that story is Gabriel Conroy, another stand-in for Joyce. Gabriel Conroy is a writer, and he is very harshly critical of nearly everyone around him. He learns humility the hard way. He gets put in his place, but more important than that, his epiphany, the last five paragraphs of that story, is cosmic. Actually, cosmic. Joyce says, my soul swooned. He has this vision of all the cosmos, and he suddenly understands rather than judging all of it. It's a very remarkable story. But once again, the point of all these epiphany is, in each case, the characters, and especially Gabriel Conroy at the end, and Joyce himself, who moves from being harshly critical to, as he becomes analytical, starts to understand that there's so much more than he thought there was. That the world before that existed only in their heads, and then the epiphany, in that awakening, there is suddenly so much more. So much more. And it's overwhelming, and it comes with some pain, there is an abrupt change in tears. And awareness. And I just find that to be true, this idea of an epiphany. And I keep coming back to it when I start getting wrapped up. I realize the world in my head is not the world. The power of this, the holidays for me, are often a sad time. I have some very bitter memories around some things that happened around the holidays. And my family is scattered, so I am, alone for them. And it's a time of year when usually I'm going from rushing to not having to be anywhere for a few weeks. So it comes as a shock. But it's interesting that at the same time I can feel those things, I'm also constantly aware that life is joyful. So there's both of these things going on at the same time. I'm at peace, there's real joy, life is good, and there's also some pain and some sadness and some, some thinking going on. And they exist kind of comfortably right next to each other. They just are. And if I step back, I realize that all the complications, what do I do about this, about that? Totally the world inside my head. It doesn't exist. And because if I step back, especially if I want to reframe, like one of my favorite activities this time of year, at the end of the year, is to lay out the strategy and the schedule for the next year so they can plan it out. And as soon as I plan it out, I realize over and over again, at most I can do a third of what it is I thought I was going to plan out because there just isn't the time to do this. And again, I'm a smart guy. What's in my head about what can be done in reality are just bizarrely at odds. And so I have to sit back and make choices. And making those choices means I have to better focus. I have to better get clear about message, better get clear about direction. So it's a very positive experience. And then I can lay out a life that actually can be lived day to day successfully and joyously. and in humility about that. There's so much greater than I. And so, anyway, coming up, 12 days after Christmas every year, that Feast of the Epiphany. So let's just do a little bit of a meditation to wrap up for here. And this is a meditation I've used actually for years. And I used to teach it to my Tai Chi students. And it's a very simple but a very powerful meditation. So as long as you're a place where you can do this, I'm going to invite you to sit comfortably, to close your eyes, hopefully with your back straight if you can, if that's comfortable. rather than saying goodbye at the end of this, I'm just going to kind of fade out and end the recording, but let you just continue on for as long as you like. So, let all your air out, breathe out, and take a nice deep breath in, nice and relaxed. And let that out. And just continue to take a couple of nice, comfortable, don't strain, don't force, nice, comfortable, deep breaths. Let all the air out. Let all the air fill in again to capacity. And as you relax, there is a light inside you, right inside your chest, inside your heart, that cannot be extinguished. It is a light that guides you, that is a light that fills and sustains you. It is a light that nourishes you. It is the light that protects you. It is the light that keeps you in good health. It is a light that keeps you in joy. And there is a light that surrounds you. A light that nourishes you. A light that protects you. A light that guides you. A light that brings joy. A light that brings peace. Always, 24/7, this light inside your heart and this light surrounding you like a huge oval all the way around you. And just feel both those lights completely supporting, permeating you. And around every one of your individual cells, around every cell in your body, there's a light. There's a light within each one of these cells. There's a light outside of each one of these cells. And see every one of your cells just floating individually in its own pool of light, with its own light inside it. And just picture every one of your cells surrounded in this light. We know from biologist Bruce Lipton's work, cells communicate through light. This is literally you. Light in and around every single cell. No tension anywhere. You are a collection of light. And just spend the next several minutes feeling this light inside you, permeating every bit of you. This light outside you, guiding, protecting, teaching, supporting. This light around every single cell and in every cell, in every part of you. It is floating in peace and joy and health and light. This is the real world, the world of light, frequency, warmth, joy. Breathe in. Breathe out. And for the next several minutes, just float in this light that is you and your connection to all that is. Namaste.